helping students and healthcare professionals not just survive, but thrive with a purpose. This is the CMDA Student Pulse Podcast with your host, Bill Reichart, National Director of CMDA Campus Ministries.
Well, welcome to another episode of CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast. I'm Bill Reichart, National Director of Campus and Community Ministries here at CMDA. And my guest today is Dr. Patty Giebink. Patty, welcome.
Hi, glad to be here.
Well, before we dive into our conversation and what we're going to be talking about, let me give our listeners a brief introduction of your bio. Patty, you're an OBGYN physician who has had 30 years of experience delivering babies here in hospitals overseas. Now, working in your private, while working, that is, in your private Sioux Falls, South Dakota practice, you began working part-time performing abortions at Planned Parenthood, the only abortion clinic in South Dakota. We're going to talk more about your journey from that to an advocate for life, your faith in Christ, and how God has taken you from that place in your journey to where you are now. But I also want to highlight a lot of our discussion is going to surround how you've documented your story in your book, Unexpected Choice, An Abortion Doctor's Journey to Pro-Life. And we're going to have the link to this book in our show notes, but I just highly recommend this. This is a very personal, well-written book. It really takes you into your life, your journey, kind of the things you were thinking through it, the ways that you were processing it, and how God used a lot of different circumstances. And one of which I'm just going to tease out is your, became a friend, Sister Josita, Josita. And her impact and why she made such a significant impact. So let's talk a little bit about your background, because any journey and understanding this redemptive account that you do so well describing in your book comes from a place that if you were to look back and you think, well, how did I get, you know, from here to here? First of all, what got you into medicine? What got you into medicine in the first place? What was your calling? What was the source of your calling?
Well, that's another long story. My dad was an orthopedic surgeon, and I'm the middle of seven siblings, and my oldest brother went to medical school. Eventually, one of my younger brothers went to medical school. So we're kind of a family of doctors, but I was actually working in exercise physiology, having gotten a master's degree, and I was thinking about getting a PhD in exercise physiology, which was kind of new at the time. And my dad said, well, if you're going to go back to school, why don't you go to medical school? Mm-hmm. And I thought you had to be brilliant to go to medical school. And then I realized I was working with a couple of doctors. I was actually in San Francisco, working in San Francisco. And I figured I was at least as smart as they were. So I sort of took up the challenge that my dad made and mm-hmm. came back to South Dakota and went to med school here and residency in Indiana, mm-hmm. and then came back to Sioux Falls. When I was in undergraduate school, if you were good in science, you were told to become a nurse mm-hmm. or a teacher. Mm. So it was pretty non-traditional.
Right. Well, you get involved in medicine, you go to medical school, again, no small feat. But would it be accurate to say, Patty, that most physicians, when they go into medicine, they're not thinking, hey, I want to do abortions, that this is something that I really want to be a part of my medical training, my medical profession. But yet you got into doing abortions. You got connected to Planned Parenthood. How did that journey happen? Because I suspect it probably was incremental. It wasn't something that you mapped out intentionally as you began this journey.
Right. Well, I was solidly pro-choice, possibly because my family was pretty liberal. I have a sister who is a year older who is very pro-choice, almost to the point of pro-abortion. Mm-hmm. And I think that was probably part of the reason. So, and my support group when I was in medical school was a bunch of pro-choice women. The name changed several times, and now I don't remember what it is. At one point, it was Women's Political Caucus. We also, I think, were affiliated with NARAL. And so they were like my support group. And when I went to medical school, it was still fairly uncommon for women to go to medical school. And I went back as an older student, and I was one of the first non-traditional older students going to medical school. But thankfully, the University of South Dakota Medical School was very helpful. And I can't say there was competition between the students. We all wanted each other to succeed. Mm-hmm. So we helped each other. And when I was looking at fields to go into, having come out of exercise physiology, I thought seriously about sports medicine. Mm-hmm. But then I got interested in women's health, mm-hmm. possibly because around that time there was quite an emphasis. I've always been interested in running and athletics, and so I had a group of running buddies, women, and Title IX had passed, but there was still a lot of inequality in women's sports. Mm-hmm. And also the effect of high-intensity aerobic training on women was also something. So I seriously thought about sports medicine, but then I got more interested in just women's health. Now, in a rural state like South Dakota, when you apply to medical school, almost everybody says, I'm going into family practice, because that's sort of the mantra. Mm. So if there was any question, you always said I was going into family practice. But I knew that I really wanted to focus on women mm-hmm. and women's health. So during medical school, when I was looking at residencies, at the time I was married and there was a good chance my husband wasn't going to come with me. So I was looking at residency programs that you could get to within a day's drive mm-hmm. from near Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So I applied to the University of Minnesota, a couple of residencies in Nebraska. And then on a fluke, because my brother-in-law had just received a fellowship in gastroenterology to Indiana University, I thought, well, I'll apply there. So I did. And I really didn't think I'd get in, but I did. I think not specifically known to me, but the doctor who was doing abortions in South Dakota for many years was a friend of Dr. Munsick, who was at Indiana University Medical Center. And when medical students are interviewing for residency, back then, pretty much nobody mentioned abortion. It was like, you didn't select a school because they offered abortion training.
Right.
And I don't think the schools even particularly advertised that they had abortion training. So I ended up going to Indiana, and they have a solid program on abortion training. And every resident had to work for so many weeks in the abortion clinic. Hmm. And out of the 7 residents that were in my class, we didn't really talk about it, but long after we were out, I realized that there weren't very many of us who actually performed abortions. So I got to do more than what would be my share. But you had to work in the abortion clinic. I think I would guess that the residents who weren't actually performing abortions were doing evaluations and pre-op exams. And I don't know.
So you got some training in it, but when you go back to South Dakota, you pick that up yet again in your practice. You had a partnership with Planned Parenthood?
When I came back to South Dakota, I started out working with another OBGYN.
Yes.
And I think he thought I was going to become a partner, but our styles didn't really mix. So eventually I went out on my own. So I was in solo private practice and very busy. I would have to say I enjoyed it. It was good. And then as the solo abortion doctor in South Dakota wanted to retire, he mm-hmm. sold his practice, his abortion practice, his whole practice, he sold to Planned Parenthood. So they moved in his clinic. He was working for them, and then they approached me and asked me if I would be willing to come and work one day a week there. And their volume of abortions was about one day a week or approximately five, maybe 6 days a month. That was the volume. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, when I wasn't doing abortions at Planned Parenthood, I was doing my own clinic, delivering babies at night, and then one day a week working at Planned Parenthood. And I think it was the abortion doctor's exit strategy was to get me involved. And I worked doing that for just under 2 years. And then they wanted to hire me full time. Mm-hmm. So I did that. I closed my practice and went to work for Planned Parenthood full time.
So you dove in, that is, to your work with Planned Parenthood. What were the circumstances that began to have you turn the corner as in terms of your thinking? Because you said, you know, I'll just read this a couple sentences in your book. It says, in 1989, we didn't grasp the physical, psychological, and emotional consequences of abortion. And as a medical and logical thinker, I thought abortion was simply an option. Now you're doing abortions with Planned Parenthood. When did that thinking start to change? And maybe the other question wedded to this is, there's a spiritual journey happening here too, I know, Patty, and we want to touch on that. How does that coincide with the adjustment in your thinking as it related to abortions and what were they, you know, that it was really taking of a human life?
I often get that question about how could I do abortions and didn't I think about, you know, the life of the fetus? And I have to say, maybe I'm just really, really good at compartmentalizing because my brain is very scientific. Mm-hmm. And what I saw the products of conception or whatever when I was doing the tissue analysis, to me, it was anatomy. It was science. It was trying to make sure that I had evacuated the uterus. Mm-hmm. And I was only doing abortions at Planned Parenthood. I wasn't doing any abortions in my private practice. Mm-hmm. South Dakota is very strict on if you do abortions, you report it. It might be a felony not to report it at the time. So it really didn't occur to me that I was ending a life. Maybe I never allowed myself to think that. So you asked then, how did a transformation happen?
Yes.
Long after I left Planned Parenthood. And in fact, it was a spiritual journey, and the pro-life journey followed that.
Okay. So the spiritual journey, did you have a religious background? Did you grow up in the church in any way?
My mother used to take us to church on Sundays for Sunday school and drop us off.
Okay.
And my dad would occasionally come and listen to the sermon.
Okay.
So, and we actually lived within walking distance, so maybe we walked home after Sunday school. I don't remember, but I went to Sunday school, and I remember some of the youth group in junior high.
Okay. So how does this spiritual journey begin for you? You didn't have a strong background. It didn't carry with you much into adulthood up until a point that you started, I don't know, hanging out with a bunch of Christ followers, crazy Christians, I know missions is in this story too. Can you just unpack that? How did that journey begin, going back into the life of a church and among these Christ followers?
So I left Sioux Falls after a very horrible, painful divorce and moved to a very small community on the Missouri River that at one point I had previously said I would never live. I had been working here in Chamberlain as a locum tenens in a little town of 2,500 on the Missouri River. There's a good hospital here. There's a region that we support, including two Indian reservations and a lot of little farming communities. So I was working here in Chamberlain doing old school, like on call 24/7, hardly ever getting any time off. And at the time, from a spiritual standpoint, I would have to say I was doing more new age stuff. But I think a lot of people are searching. I was searching. I didn't really just exactly know what I was searching for. And somebody that I knew in town said, well, this church this Assemblies of God church has a new pastor, and you might want to try it out.
Okay.
And I had no idea what Assemblies of God was, what Pentecostal was. Mm. And in this small community, I didn't know a soul in the church. But one Sunday, I literally walked into the church for their Sunday morning service, and God totally captivated me. It's just hard to explain, because the minister, when he gave a sermon, it's like there was just a laser to my heart.
Well, you say in the book, too, that it's, you realize a lot of the trials that you had been facing up to that point really opened you up, I think, to this message, because you came to the end of yourself in so many ways.
Yes, exactly. So people asked me why I left Planned Parenthood, and I said, well, it's really very easy. They fired me.
And okay.
So this is a word for the students.
Okay.
Never think you're indispensable.
Okay.
I was the only abortion doctor in the whole state of South Dakota, and I worked at Planned Parenthood. And they fired me. And there has been no other doctor from South Dakota that has gone to Planned Parenthood to do abortions.
Hmm.
After I left, they started flying doctors in from Minnesota and I think Pennsylvania, and that's what they were doing. So instead of feeling like, oh no, I got fired, I had a tremendous feeling of relief. It was like this burden had been lifted from my shoulders. And I remember telling my husband, who was a farmer at the time, and I remember I told him I got fired, and I was just laughing. And I said, well, you know, we've got a good crop in the field. It's a beautiful fall. You know, life is good. There'll be something else that'll come along. Well, it was about a year later that I ended up in Chamberlain. So I think it was a series of really painful events.
Mm.
My husband dumped me for a younger woman.
Mm.
You know, I got fired from Planned Parenthood. He kicked me out of my home and my farm. And I was sort of homeless, jobless, kind of, you know, what do I do next?
So you go to the church, you hear this pastor, it resonates. Something about that church, those people, really, it was provocative. It caught your attention. So you connected with that community. That was a community that you began to be a part of?
I was totally an odd duck. I mean, I don't think they knew what to do with me, actually. The amazing thing is that was the spring of 2001.
Okay.
And they didn't have a clue I worked at Planned Parenthood.
All right. Okay.
I had been flying under the wire, so to speak, for 5 years, where I really didn't know. I still thought I was pro-choice for a long time.
Mm.
But when people say, well, what changed? I said, I didn't have an epiphany. I listened to Abby Johnson's story, and she had this epiphany.
Yeah.
I tell people I had to write a book because it was a long, painful journey.
Sure. But you immersed yourself in that community, in that church, and hearing the preaching of the word and the worship. I can only imagine that was beginning to shape and form your heart and changing your soul. I mean, it was, yeah, that was very instrumental.
The biggest difference was that God had lifted the blinders and gave me a passion and a real desire and an ability to read the word. Because I had, you know, through a variety of things, I tried to read the Bible before.
Yeah.
And it was just hard. But then I had this deep desire to study the word. I found another woman who was about at the same place I was.
Yeah.
She had started going to the same church about the same time. And
right.
One day I said to her, have you ever thought about doing a Bible study, you know, over the phone, because she lived on a ranch? And so we did that for a year and a half. We had this Bible study thing out of Florida that just was a bunch of questions and a bunch of scripture. And one of us would call the other at about 7 o'clock in the morning, and we'd pray, we'd go over these questions, and then we'd go about our day. But as I read the Bible, and God had opened up my eyes and my heart to receive his word. And two things became so clear to me over those 2 years when I was spending so much time in the word. One was that, I mean, I had been raised with evolution, evolution, evolution. Hmm. How could I believe creation? But clearly, you read the Bible, and it's all about creation. Now, there may be some evolution over the millennium that happens, but we are created by God and in His image.
Yes.
So then the other thing was God's character. Mm. And God's character, He creates life. Mm. He is a God of life. That is indisputable. I still didn't have an epiphany, but slowly it came to me that, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I had even compartmentalized my doing abortions to the point where somebody else had to bring it up. Mm. And at the same time, I was working with an OBGYN who is just this marvelous Catholic woman who was not afraid to say in any group that she was pro-life, and so should we be pro-life. And she had a profound influence on me. And so from 2001, when I walked into the church, until 2006, when I was approached by some people to do a commercial, a pro-life commercial, about a referred abortion ban. We were trying to ban abortion in South Dakota, and they were filming pro-life docs, and they wanted to film me. So I went in to supposedly be photoshopped into a group, and instead what they ended up putting over the TV ads was me saying, "Hi, I'm Dr. Patty Giebink. I used to work for Planned Parenthood, and now I'm asking you to vote yes for life."
Wow.
And so it was like, boom, everybody knew. And I thought, oh, wow, I'm going to lose all my friends that are solidly pro-choice. I'm going to lose my new friends at church because they're going right. to find out what I did.
Yeah.
When I told my sister that this little short TV spot was coming out the next day, she said, "Don't ever talk to me again." Oh. And she didn't talk to me for 2 years. Oh. But now it's like, we just don't talk about religion or politics.
Okay. How did the people in the church respond?
They kind of ignored it as well. I mean, they would come up to me and say, "Thank you for your position." I don't think they knew what to say to me. Mm. I mean, we're friends and everything. And the things that I have been doing in the last 10 plus years, trying to educate people about abortion and pro-life. And right now, I think what God has for me is to try and educate both sides with love and compassion, and help the pro-life people to be persuasive and compassionate and respectful, and to guide people into understanding the value of life.
You know, you have eyes to see, and you remember how you saw the world years ago and now how you see it. And you are a bridge maker. You can create those kind of common ground conversations that people can talk to one another, not at one another, which is so often we don't even have much discussion and dialogue. It's just noise. So I know that's a big part of your ministry and helping create those opportunities for discussion and understanding of the pro-life position, and those in who are pro-life to understand what the other party thinks, and you know, to understand, not just create straw men or women, but to actually represent and help them understand their positions. But I want to go back to your spiritual journey some too, because I think one thing is fascinating here, and something was going on that was unseen to you, which was a woman named Sister Josita, who saw you, did not know you, saw you on TV. I'm trying to make sure my memory, you can correct me at any point if I'm not getting the story correct, saw you on TV and felt motivated, prompted by God to pray for you. Why don't you fill in the rest? Because you obviously must have discovered that eventually, because you were able to write about it. What was going on there?
So when I started working at Planned Parenthood in 1995, the local newspaper put an article in and mentioned me by name.
Okay.
And said I was starting to do abortions at Planned Parenthood. And apparently, I said something in there that made Sister Josita think that I didn't really plan to be a full-time abortion doctor, that maybe I was just helping out or something. So she started praying for me after only reading in the newspaper about me. So then fast forward to 2006, where I do that short TV spot asking people to vote yes for life. That was right before the general election. So that was late October, early November. And so everybody, most people in South Dakota saw that TV spot.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to laugh. God has a sense of humor. Because 2 days after that came out on TV, I went to Pakistan for a month.
Mm.
And so I had been planning Pakistan for probably 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of protected me from all the stuff going on around the election. So when I came back from Pakistan a month later, I picked up my 1 month stack of mail and was going through. So I had a stack of bills and junk, and then I had a stack of personal stuff. And there were two things that really wowed me. One was Sister Josita had written me a letter and explained how she had seen the newspaper in 1995 and started praying for me and had been praying faithfully. And so she saw the results of her prayers 10 years later on the TV and wrote me that letter. And so then we started writing back and forth, and eventually we met. Now we still write back and forth. She's in her 90s and has some health limitations. And I need to get back. She lives about 2.5 miles from where I do, and I need to make a point to go and visit her. She is now in the assisted living at the Presentation Sisters Complex. So she inspires me. She inspires me. Her life inspires me. Originally, the chapter in the book was much longer. And of course, we had to cut things down. And my editor said, well, it's about me, not about her. But she has an amazing life.
Let me ask you about a student has now heard this conversation, would like to reach out to you. How do people get in contact with you?
You could email drpatty@unexpectedchoice.com.
Okay.
drpatty@unexpectedchoice.com.
Okay. We'll put that in the show notes as well. And
sure.
And of course, the link to the book and other resources that may be of help.
And also, if you want, I don't do it very well and I don't do it very often, but I am on Facebook.
Okay.
And it's just Patty Giebink on, you know, at Facebook. So you can do that too, but it takes me a while to see your message.
No worries.
But you're welcome to contact me that way.
Okay. Well, I knew that would be a question that our students would be asking, so I wanted to find out how they could best do that. But this has been, an encouraging discussion because it's a redemptive story, and that's what's so exciting to talk to you about, to watch and to see how the hand of God has just orchestrated and moved you along this journey to the place that you are now and the ways that you're serving and being used by Him. And so thank you for your faithfulness. Thank you for all that you do. And I know you keep busy. You have opportunities to advocate and to speak and to represent the pro-life movement and all of the issues associated with that. So thank you, Patty, for what you're doing, and God bless you.
Thank you so much. What a privilege to speak with you. Thank you.
Before we conclude our podcast, I'd like to share a couple of things that you need to know. First of all, mark your calendar. May 2nd to the 5th, 2024 is CMDA's national convention in the beautiful mountains of Asheville, North Carolina. Simply go to cmdstudentlife.org/NatCon to learn more about how to register and information on student scholarships, because we want to make sure that there's nothing that's going to hinder you from joining us this coming national convention, May 2nd to the 5th, in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. Also, don't forget, if you want to find the Pulse podcast via our video version, you can go to our YouTube channel, and that is found CMDA Student Life at YouTube, and we have all of these audio podcasts in a video version right there for you. And to keep up with the latest information and resources, you just need to have the Student Life app. If you haven't done so, download it. You can get it on your smartphone. The app is for both the Android and the Apple, and that will keep you up to date with not only the most important information, but resources that'll be right in your pocket. Devotions every Monday and Thursday come out on the app, as well as group Bible studies, and the Student Pulse podcast is found on the app as well. So check that out if you haven't done so already. Download the app, set up a profile, and you'll stay connected with CMDA. And as always, you can follow and like us on all of our socials. We're on the Instagram, the Facebook, and X, formerly known as Twitter, finding us at our handle, CMDA Student Life. Well, thank you for joining us for this episode of CMDA's Student Pulse podcast, and I look forward to talking to you soon. Bye now.
Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. CMDA's Student Pulse podcast is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the organization. CMDA is non-partisan and does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on Student Pulse podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members.